will the angelic hosts be but highly evolved selves that we know of, and that we have from time to time had connection or contact with? They are to us the most highly developed beings in every sense, meaning in the world. They are developed in their intelligence, they are developed in their spirituality and oneness with Father God. They are developed even in appearance beyond normal expression. If I were to try and depict what one of these great entities or servants appear like under one's sight, I don't know how you would do it. One could depict perfection in man in such a way that all that you have ever seen on earth that represents beauty in its perfection, you have some slight idea. But it isn't only in face and form. Something which obviously comes within them, or which gives them almost a transparency that is their bodies themselves, their solid sight, have an inner quality of glow which suffuses the whole outward appearance. In consequence, they appear in a kind of illumination. It's the only way I can describe it, and all around the is an aura of such magnificent, glorious beauty and color that words cannot describe. And from their very beings comes harmonious sound which beggars description. If one were to try to depict such a being, one realizes how futile our words. And one can only say that a human being who has reached such a stage of development is so absolutely beautiful in physique, in appearance, in harmony, in color, in music. In fact, they are miracles, if I can put it like this, of God Himself. They are saturated with God power, God-like in appearance. The tremendous spiritual glow which comes from them in itself, when you come into its auric range, you feel uplifted, you feel changed in the fleeting second of the time. These manifestations that appear to you in your world from time to time at rare intervals to certain persons or people, such as these appearances of what people have thought to be the Virgin Mary, where they are suffused with the magnitude of its beauty and power. These appearances, which are rare, are from these angelic ones. There's no doubt. But because you'll find they invariably appear to the innocent, to the young, spiritually minded, rather than to the more adult, more so-called mentally developed people on earth. Any entity or any soul that is non-evolutionary, because it seems to me that once a soul ceases to evolve in some shape or form, in some manner, then there can be no life. As I understand it, all life is evolving. Life is never static, it cannot be. Life must always be constantly going forward, gaining greater experience, greater development, greater color, greater beauty, ignore it. I do not think of such a thing as not evolution. No, you see, the point is that we never cease to evolve spiritually. Spiritual evolution is something which is always with us. Must be so. I should imagine once we cease to evolve, we will cease to exist. Of course, it may be, I don't know the answers to some of these questions, but it may be that in eons and eons of time, in spirit, one can turn time into spirit. One may evolve beyond an outward shape or form and become pure spirit in itself, lacking in a physical appearance, although maybe be able to take on shape at will. This may be so. There are certain things that I cannot answer, I do not know. All the entities that I have known, and all the greatest and most highly developed souls that I have seen and had experience with, all have outward form and shape. But whether these very highly evolved souls beyond our normal condition of life are able to take on shape at will, I would not like to say. It's possible they can and do. I think that the more one develops and the more one evolves, the less important it is necessarily to have shape or form, unless it is for a specific reason or purpose. I think shape and form is something which is essential to us, so that we should recognize each other, especially in the early stages of leaving your earth and meeting one another again. And I think that while man clings to certain ideas which are good in themselves, he shall retain such form and shape. But I can quite conceive of the fact that pure spirit does not need or require form or shape, and in highly evolved states of being it may be that such things do not exist, because form and shape is, I won't say a material conception of man, but man wouldn't realize or be conscious of himself without it. But in spirit, where so many things herself are so far removed from earthly ideas and conjecture, it seems to me that it is possible, conceivable, that as God presumably has no shape, he is not a man, as the earth world often thinks, or those who have studied their Bible believe, a man who sits upon the throne to judge the quick and the dead. So I believe that it is that God, having no shape, no outward appearance, can assume such if it pleases him. And one likes to feel that it is so, that as we evolve, we can assume various shapes and guises and appear at different places and times for a specific work, for a specific reason. There are many puzzling factors, but when we begin to try and analyze God, what is God, it seems that we always come back to the same answer, that God is fundamentally spirit. And that means that if he is pure spirit, which we know he must be, that he has within himself all that is important to man's evolution. All that is fine and good, all that is beautiful, and such power, and there must be, of course, even there, a certain amount of mystery. For without mystery of some description, in any form of life, there can be little left to the imagination, little left to discover. That is why I think it is always important that you will always have more to discover, more to learn, more knowledge to gain. We can only tell you so much because there are many things that we do not know. We are limited, you are limited. And it seems to me that the more highly evolved we become, the less limited we are. But there's always something left to find out or to gain in knowledge and expression. And the tremendous power of spirit is such that it is unlimited. And that is, I think, one of the most wonderful things about eternal life.
Would you say that the angelic beings
are highly evolved souls who were created in spirit and have never been upon earth in the shape of man, and in consequence, they are completely, or would seem to be completely perfect? That I do not know. The only entities that I have ever met or conversed with or had any connection with have always been entities who once had another existence of some kind or another. Oh, well, of course, there again, I think when you refer to planets, we must bear in mind that the Earth world is only one of many worlds, and that various lives have been lived by innumerable souls on different planets, not necessarily always like unto the Earth life, often quite different. But once they enter into the spiritual regions, once they enter into the spiritual spheres, they may return to Earth as new souls, reborn into an earthly body for a certain specific time to do certain work, or it may be that they may return to their own particular world, reborn into a new body. There are many, many questions that are rather difficult to answer. First, of course, from your point of view, that is, I refer not so much to you two personally, because your mind is more open to receive knowledge, but to many people who on the earth, who may listen to these words of mine, may say, oh yes, these things are very fine, but we haven't yet proved that there is life on other planets. Let's first prove that. The point is that proof is not far distant. We will have undoubted proof of life on other planets, which will open up great vistas of study for people like yourselves who want to know more about these other worlds, what the purpose is of life there, and how they are aligned to the Earth world, if at all. There's no doubt that you are influenced, often have been probably longer than you realize, by these influences and peoples from other planets. But one must distinguish between peoples of the Earth, peoples who dwell on other planets, and peoples who have passed from your world and from the worlds of planets into our world. For ours is a world which is unseen, all around and about you, whereas you can see the stars and the moon and the sun, and you see all the solar systems of planets. At the same time, they are to some extent a reality to the majority of people in your world, but to very few. The reality of the spirit and the spiritual worlds is limited, partly because people have prejudices, partly because they're blinded by creed or dogma, or perhaps they are agnostic, or at least they like to think they are. They like to think there's nothing after so-called death. But all around and about you is the unseen world, which is vaster, so much vaster than even any world you can dream or think of. If all the planets and all the earth worlds were placed together and made into one perfect whole, it would be infinitesimal in comparison to the spiritual world, which is all around and about you. But I do think that all spiritual beings, all peoples who live in the realms of spirit, at some time had life either upon Earth or on one of the planets. But one must bear in mind this too, although the Earth world has developed in certain ways over the centuries, Their development is infinitesimal in itself in comparison to the development of certain persons and people on certain planets. A lot of people, even now, cannot conceive, even scientists say that it is not possible for life to exist on planets or certain planets. Scientists say that it is quite out of the question that life as you know it can exist. But then whoever suggested that life on these planets is necessarily anything like you know? The point is that we were discussing earlier form and shape in regard to highly evolved cells. As I've said to you, I've only experienced contact with people who have an outer form and shape. But that does not alter the fact that one can have a mental, if I can use the term, link with highly evolved cells without seeing them. The same as you, in a more limited way, can have mental and spiritual communication without actually seeing a person in form or shape. So it is that on the planets there is life, more highly evolved, but the links there between you and them and us is more of a mental one than in any sense or form a physical one. That is why in recently having more proof, more evidence of attempts being made in contact with the Earth from these planetary cells, these planetary entities. They have a much more highly developed brain than the Earth man. They have perfected many things which are beyond your comprehension. They have a kind of matter, for instance, in their world, which is much more highly developed than yours. It's on a higher rate of vibration. It's much more adaptable and usable. Whereas you are more limited, they are, I won't say unlimited, but they can go much further. Already they have found how to come, as it were, from their own world and closely link up with yours in what you call sources or something. The point is that they have a very highly developed and skillful mind and have perfected what you term, I suppose, machines, which make it possible for them to skim the surface of the Earth. But so far, to my knowledge, none have landed, although you have heard to the contrary about that. The point is that to my knowledge none have landed. I think that is one thing that they have not yet been able to do.
That is the idea of what is supposed to be landing on November the 6th.
Well, it would be interesting. Of course, they obviously would like to land.
Yes.
But at the same time, it may be, and I should imagine, is very unlikely. Clarify is that the highly developed being, that is, the highly developed spiritual being, is sexless. You see, sex is a purely physical thing. It is an essential thing. But as a person progresses spiritually and in their mind, as they leave behind physical desires, as they leave behind physical ideas, physical conditions, and develop further into spiritual atmosphere and way of thinking and a way of life, so gradually through their development and as a mental and spiritual being, the outer and less physical side of their nature ceases to matter. Point is that a highly evolved soul is sexless from the point of view that they take upon themselves automatically in their spiritual unfolding and development, a sexless nature and a sexless appearance. There is no such thing as male and female on very highly evolved planes. Sex is unimportant. They become completely sexless.
Isn't there even a positive and a negative, or are the two amalgamated
for the concept? Well, positive and negative, male and female, which is so essential to your way of life and for the continuance of that life, doesn't exist on the higher realms at all. It isn't even necessary, it isn't important, it isn't essential. Because whereas you have to replenish the earth world over here, it is not so. Our world is composed of people who have left your world, and in consequence, as they evolve less away from the earth, more away from the earth, the less physical they must be in concept, must less physical they must be in appearance. And they become a new order of being, where sex has no meaning or no purpose, no part. They are the best. They evolve, as it were, and become perfect. They are the best of both sexes entwined. After all, sex, what is sex? The physical aspect is something which in nature has taken upon itself. Nature has asserted itself in one way or the other. Sex in itself is unimportant to us, completely useless and unimportant.
Swedenborg, of course, introduced that question of the law of correspondence, and thereby we are enabled to perceive the spiritual reality even to the earthly means, and that inborn creativity, that conscious linking of that active and passive principle of divinity, which we have in the innermost recess of our being as man, woman on earth.
Well, ever since I can remember, man has referred to God as Mother, Father, God. Father, Mother, God, the creative spirit. And as man evolves towards God, he becomes, to some extent, as he must be, sexless. He must be, as it were, the complete whole. A man cannot be complete because he has not experienced in so many different ways the emotions and the reactions and the feelings of the woman, as a woman has not had the same reactions as the man. There must be the fusion of the two, even to create what the two must be together. The man and the woman to create must be together to bring new life. Over here, we are talking about a new spiritual life, the evolving of a spiritual being in all its beauty. Therefore, the male and the female must be, as it were, one. There must be that unity to make perfect. And so it is that as a man progresses through aeons and aeons of time, probably returning to the earth for various incarnations and experiences, so as he evolves through spiritual worlds, he ceases to be a man as the world understands it. He becomes a spiritual being, which is something quite different. The same applies to a woman. On the highly developed stages of existence, where sex is not important, you have perfection of beauty of both sexes in one. You have perfection in all its glory and all its beauty. That to me is an intelligent and sensible explanation of the development of the human race as the human being. physical attributes, physical conditions of life are purely, fundamentally material. They may have spiritual force working through them, which we know they do. The spirit is there, but the spirit is restricted by the earthly body and the earthly way of life, the earthly perception of things. Once the spirit is freed, it may have unto itself an outward appearance of male or female for a time, but eventually it will respond to the spiritual essence of all life, which is Father, Mother, God, and it will gradually dissociate itself with old theories and ideas and outward shapes and beings, and it will become perfected and become, as it were, completely a whole, a one, a unit. There are many things which are very difficult to explain in an earthly language.
Yes.
And we can only endeavor to bring it down to some kind of level where it can be understood in part. We don't expect you to understand in completeness or in the whole. It seems to me that whatever we can convey to you, we can convey so much, no more.
You don't want us trying, do you?
No, of course not. Why not? After all, it is only by trying that man can expand himself and learn. After all, it's our job, it's our task, it's our joy to come and talk to you and help you as best we can. But we must bear in mind that there must be certain limits. We may, as we go on, be able to describe and explain more to you. But there must be a barrier, there must be a limit. Even when you come here yourselves, when you leave behind your physical bodies, you'll find that there will be limits to what you can assimilate in knowledge and achieve in development for a time. But the time will come that you will then gradually be able to evolve a little further. Life is constant change, constant movement, constant development of a spiritual nature, as I say, until such time as maybe one develops far, far removed, far, far away from one's self, until you become so, I won't say perfected, because I doubt if perfection can exist. I think one can become perfected to a point, and then there's still something else that appeals to you in some measure that you must know about. It seems to me there's nothing that you cannot achieve. At the same time, it takes eons and eons of time. Eternity is something we cannot analyze as a term or a word. It's something beyond one's comprehension, even ours. But it's there. And there's so much to learn, so much to know, so much to discover. And we go on and on, developing spiritually and mentally, until we, lose ourselves for him. To explain as far as is in our power to all those souls in your world who are seeking and striving and yearning to know these things. The one thing we are sure, that all of God's creatures have a place in his universe, that each and every soul has opportunity to develop and to become affected in him. No soul is ever completely and utterly lost. There is always hope. There is always possibilities. There is always a chance. And that opportunity and that chance is given at various times. The soul must find its expression. That which has been created by the divine must eventually return to it. No sheep is lost in the fold. Although there are those in your world who preach a religion that is narrow in its conception, and one would even go as far as to say is far removed from God himself, yet they often use this religion of fear adherence to an outward faith and creed. We know that God is love, that God is all might, all powerful good, and that in him all will find their salvation. We have no narrow conception of these things. We do not cling to outworn creeds and dogmas. We cling to truth. We cling to knowledge and experience, which proves over and over again God's love and his will for his children. You are blessed inasmuch that you know certain things. You know that life continues. You know that under certain conditions we can break down the barrier between our world and yours and commune with you. You have learned a great deal. And if all in your world knew, as you know, and put into practice that which we have endeavored to give to them, your world would be a changed place indeed. There would be peace and tranquility of spirit. There would be harmony between peoples and nations. There would be love surging throughout the breasts of every human soul. For all would realize that they were children of the one divine Father, and the love and the power which is surrounding about them is such that they can be so uplifted that your world can indeed become a heaven while yet upon an earth. There is so much that we can achieve and do. We are grateful to people like you who give up your valuable time and make the effort to find out that you might in turn help others less informed and less unable to do these things than you. You have a great and glorious work, and we are grateful that you are able to carry on and do this, if only for a few more years. Be patient with yourselves. Be patient with those around and about you who do not understand or seem not to want to understand. You can do a great deal yet, and we shall help you. Be patient and know that love will overcome all things. All barriers can be removed by patience, tolerance, love. We are very fortunate in having you, and we are grateful. We see certain people in your world to whom certain things are still important and will remain so. To them I realize that one cannot hope to change their outlook or their opinion. They feel it is an essential thing, for instance, to have communion. And if that is essential to them, then I suggest they carry on. But I know, and I think all intelligent people realize, that God works through his children in every conceivable possible way for their good. We know that Jesus came into the world as a disciple of the Most High to give to the world of his time and day a conception of God and his love for humanity. He came to show a path which others could tread. He did not necessarily come to found a religion. The religion of Christianity was founded after his so-called death. Christ returned from the so-called dead to appear to certain people to prove that he still lived. He turned also to the thief on the cross and said that today thou shalt be with me in paradise, not tomorrow or centuries hence in time. Jesus, in everything he said and did, demonstrated God's will and love and purpose. He did not come to break down many of the so-called religions of his day, particularly. He came that he might show God through himself. He did not come to start a religion or necessarily to break down other religions. He came as a disciple of God to show a path, a way of righteousness and of truth, a way that would lead to the betterment of humanity. Since his passing, all kinds of peculiar things have been brought into being. And it seems to me that man has become more immersed in creeds and dogmas and rituals than he is in the simple truths that Jesus knew and taught and expressed. Jesus performed miracles in your world, and they are only miracles because man cannot understand them or how they were brought into being. A thing ceases to be a miracle when you understand it. And in this great truth, which we are trying to give to you, we have at various times endeavored to explain to you or show you how these things are natural law. The so-called dead returning to you is a thing that happens day by day. But to many of these Christians, to many of these who profess to follow Christ, they cannot understand it. They say it must be evil. They have always an explanation or an answer that fits in with their own way of thinking. If they cannot apply a thing to their own particular religion or creed, they will say it is of the devil. They use the devil as a weapon against everything that assails their particular belief or creed. They are more concerned with creed than they are with truth. Christ came into the world to show truth, to bring truth. He was not concerned with himself. He was not concerned with churches and creeds and dogmas. He had nowhere to lay his head. He was a man of God. Money, wealth, position, churches, temples, those things meant nothing to him. He was only concerned with love, love for his neighbor, love for the children of God. He tried to show them the path. When the woman touched the hem of his garment, he said, "Thy faith hath made thee whole." And so it is, that it is the faith within each individual, the faith in a loving Father, that makes each one whole. It is not in creeds and dogmas. It is not in relics that have been handed down for centuries. These things are of the earth. They're material things. They're unimportant things in themselves. It is the things of the spirit that matter, the things that are everlasting, that are of God. If a man wants to go to church, wants to bow his knee to an altar, if he wants to have holy communion, as it is called, that's entirely up to him. These are outward expressions. These are physical, material things. You may say they have a spiritual conception. If you feel that, then carry on, I say to these people. But what is important and what is to us vital is that God is within each and every soul. It is within man himself that he finds salvation, for he is a spiritual being within himself. The outward expression of the things that are around and about you, these also are of God. And these things I refer to are of nature, of beauty and of color and of light. They are representative. They are part of the divine. But in man-made things, so many of them are of no consequence as far as we are concerned. We are not concerned with vestments. We are not concerned with the theatrical effect that is created in a church. We are not concerned with pomp and ceremony. We are not concerned with all the things which keep man from God, which are a barrier, which stand between him and God. Man, when he feels within himself God's stirring, does not need outward pomp and ceremony and show to help him. For when man is stirred within himself, it is really of God. But when he is sometimes stirred in a church or a temple, where there is great pomp and ceremony, that is not necessarily of God. It is kind of an emotional thing, which oft-times passes quickly and has no inner meaning. Man must be stirred within himself because it is God within that is telling him of that which is right and just and true. Christ, the simple carpenter of Nazareth, came into the world to show a path, for man's enlightenment and spiritual upliftment and unfoldment. He did not need the paraphernalia and the pomp and the ceremony of the church. And I know that his disciples and his followers, especially in the early days, did not require it either. They had to flee, often towns and cities, hold their meetings in dark places, underground, hidden, squalid, but God was there within them, and oft times when they were tested, they were not found wanting. They did not want the pomp and ceremony of churches and temples and the vestments that adorn the body. They did not want these things. They wanted Christ within, and they found him, and they lived with him and for him. But since the early times, the church has become such great magnitude and such great force and power in the world, it has become political. It has become all the things it should not have become. Instead of being representative of the simple teacher, the simple, mild, human creature called Jesus, it has become much that is of the opposite, powerful, material, concerned with vestments and properties, monies. In fact, it has delved into every material aspect of life.
They take away the sacrament, as they put it, and it doesn't last very much when they get around the altar.
If a person wishes to believe that they're eating the flesh of a human being and drinking the blood of a human being, and they find satisfaction in that, then it's entirely up to them to carry on. But I cannot imagine anyone who believes and follows Christ can believe in cannibalism.